I'm Frank Vaughn, and it is January 14th, 2025, and I'm going to begin this video on a personal note. I alluded to yesterday how I'm going to dive back into fasting. I think I'm actually going to go for a 40-day fast, maybe even 46, to the end of February. And of course, that'll be restricted to water, black tea, coffee, and electrolytes so that I don't seriously malfunction. I'm not supernatural. I'm going to have to obey the need to intake some salt. So this is what we're going to try and do. Whether or not I have to break early is just going to be determined entirely by health markers that I monitor myself. But setting that aside, what I want to talk about today primarily is superficiality in politics, among other things, but superficiality in politics. That's the wrong one. This is a post on X from an individual, and it says, "Carney is incredibly charming in this interview. I had doubts on how he could manage transitioning into politics. But if this is any indication, he will do absolutely fine." As a friend of mine, Kelly Lamb, pointed out today, we've already done this sounding nice thing with Justin Trudeau for the last 10 years, and the country has been delivered into a broken state. It's absolutely terrible where we are. And anybody that isn't just insulated from reality understands how bad a state this country is in. We've been talking about it in the last several videos. On a national level, we face an existential crisis. We face a unity crisis. We have a crime crisis. We have a morality crisis. We have an ethics crisis. We have an immigration crisis. We have a housing crisis. All of these things were created because people voted for the guy who sounded nice. Now listen, Ted Bundy, I encourage everybody at some point or another to watch the footage of Ted Bundy's trial and his press conferences, which it's kind of bizarre that the man had a press conference and he was allowed to address the media directly. Very charismatic individual, very nice sounding at moments, very persuasive, because that's how it works with psychopaths and sociopaths. They lie as fluently and as nicely as everyone else tells the truth. So I said, sounding nice absolves him. This is a prime example of the shallowness with which the common voter makes their decisions. It's kind of funny because when the tweet's blocked on my screen, it's also blocked for me, so I have to lean and duck out of the way so that I can actually see it. We have to go deeper than this. And one of the fatal flaws of democracy is that the lowest common denominator, the person who thinks less, the person who feels their way through voting, the person who is completely low information and just believes memes online, their vote is of equal power and substance as the vote of the most informed, intellectually intelligent people in the country. It's a huge problem. And just another example is this other individual. Oh, you can't see the post anymore because this guy blocked me as soon as I made this criticism. So Daniel Smith, actually, I already pulled that up yesterday. Daniel Smith was down in Mar-a-Lago representing the interests of Alberta. She also indicated that if Ottawa decides to destroy Alberta as a political weapon to get back at Donald Trump, it would trigger a national unity crisis. Those are the right words. Doug Ford today came out and he said, in reaction to Daniel Smith, she's not speaking for the country. The country doesn't speak for Alberta. The country doesn't speak for Saskatchewan. In fact, the country doesn't even speak for Quebec. Quebec speaks for itself. So why not us? Why not the other provinces in this, as we've already talked about in this video, this broken federation that has been led towards destruction and perdition by the government in Ottawa, and not just them. We can go back and we can look at Harper too, and we can look at Mulroney, and we can look at Chrétien. We can peel back the layers, but we're going to end up with, there's never been a worse time for Canada as a unit. Ottawa doesn't represent the people. specifically at this moment, and Ottawa does not represent the interests of the provinces. In fact, the way that they're talking, they're going to destroy us to try and prove a point to Trump. It's time for us to assert ourselves. It's time for us to say no. It's time for us to say, with what army are you going to destroy us? We can stand on our own. We want to eat. We want to survive. We want to have jobs. We want to have healthy families, and we want to have them in homes. We want to defeat the housing crisis. We want to defeat the rampant immorality and crime that is taking over this country. Doug Ford, as successful as he is, broke every promise on his way to power that he made. And I was one of those people that he made promises to. He delivered on almost none of it. I remember standing there in a small town in rural Ontario, Campbellford, Ontario. And Doug Ford was there giving a rally, and I went up and I shook his hand and we talked. But during the course of his speech and Christine Elliott's speech, I stood up and I grabbed the microphone and I talked about the creeping totalitarian communism that was taking over our politics. And thunderous applause broke out in the room, including the applause of Doug Ford and Christine Elliott. And Doug Ford actually said, "You're right, we're opposed by communists." Well, Doug Ford is just right of the NDP. He favors most of their policies, but he only argues about what degree they're going to implement. He does not care about Alberta. This fool, every time he opens his mouth, he makes us look even stupider in the eyes of the Americans, just like Elizabeth May, every time that she opens her mouth. It's kind of crazy. Now, moving on, which is exactly what we in the West need to do if this is what Ottawa wants to do. If Ottawa wants to destroy us to get back at the United States, we will need to move on one way or another. And I hope Daniel Smith remains very strong on that. And I hope Scott Moe remains very strong on that. He came out the other day and he said we need a federal election, and we do. But we're not going to get one. Because as people in this country, as I've said, we're powerless, and this federation is horribly broken. This federation hates people. It hates people power. It hates actual democracy. It hates empowering citizens, which is why it only gives you the opportunity to mark an X on a ballot every 4 years. And even with that little opportunity, it causes so much trouble for the powers that be. Believe me when I say they lose sleep over what little power they've given you. But we're going to move on to... This is a U.S. article. You were still married, correct? Pete Hegseth hammered for cheating on multiple ex-wives in wild Senate hearing clash. I'm not going to argue the morality of Trump's appointees for his cabinet. And I'm not going to argue Trump's morality. I think that when it comes to the affairs of man, we should trust but verify, and we should always remain skeptical, and we should be very wary of choosing sides. If you plant your flag in one political party or another political party, and you just bat for the team, you lose your ability to think critically and to speak critically. So you must always be critical. Save your faith for Yeshua and his father, and remember that the affairs of man down here have nothing to do with the God of this world. Now, morality is an interesting thing when it comes to the Democrats specifically, but also Republicans. But in this instance, they're hammering him. We're talking about Tim Kaine. He's a Democrat. We're talking about Democrats hammering a Republican nominee. This is the party of Diddy. This is the party of Beyonce. This is the party of perversion. These are the people trying to transition your kids. These are the people who take pride in destigmatizing the killing of the littles in the womb. These are the people who bring on stage the most repulsive individuals imaginable, the most morally bankrupt people, in support of their efforts. Did you see the constant parade of perversion that was the Kamala Harris campaign? Are they trying to pretend that infidelity is just a Republican problem? That infidelity and way worse things are very common in the very top tiers of power? It's so fake. Their morality is so fake. We've read about Jimmy Savile in the BBC, which many of us knew for years, which it's always interesting to me is, why is Elon Musk talking about it now? Why are these individuals talking about it now when they never really addressed it in the past, except very loosely? This is the party of Epstein. This is the party of Bill Clinton, serial philanderer. One of the most unfaithful presidents in the history of the United States. In the most fake marriage. I mean, it's not just him. Hillary Clinton and Vince Foster. That's an affair. There's another story there when it comes to Vince Foster. But I'll leave that to you to figure out. All of a sudden, they're going to be the moral police? It's ridiculous. This is the party of that spawns behavior like, and I'm trying to think how to word it. If I get a little disjointed and I sound like I don't know what I'm doing, I'm trying to think of how to say things so that the algorithm doesn't just punish me for it. And it's almost impossible to know what you're going to get punished for because you don't know what the keywords are. You don't know what triggers it. So you have to, you know, think in real time. There was this thing, I don't even want to call her a woman because she's not a woman. I mean, technically, she is with the right parts, but not how I think of a woman and what a proper woman should be, who proudly finished 1,000 men in 12 hours and has seemingly been doing live streams about it. I don't watch any of them, but has been seemingly promoting what I would call this heinous act before the world. And I don't know what's more disappointing, that she did it, that people care that she did it, or that 1,000 pathetic men lined up to partake. What is wrong with this world? These are the people that Tim Kaine and the Democrats don't talk about. They carry on with their lives and they never call any of this immorality that's destroying our girls. Make no mistake. Destroying our men. And it's not just the Democrats. I talked about the Tates. They're terrible people. They demean your girls and they make your men into basically incels. They're never going to breed. And there's nothing wrong with, because there's a lot of views about how to run a household. There's nothing wrong with men being the head of a household. Because generally speaking, in a functional marriage that has children, that isn't full of infidelity, that has loyalty, that has monogamy, that has the things and the ingredients that actually make for a very happy life, typically speaking, one person isn't in charge anyway. In my own marriage, there are areas where my wife dominates and makes the decisions. And I yield to that. I defer to that. And then there's very clear, distinct areas, usually dealing with the outside world, where I make the decisions. And it goes back and forth. And even if I make the decisions, we still discuss. We discuss everything. I've often heard it said that there's some kind of problem whenever one of us is trying to make a plan to go and do something, that whether it's her or me, we say, I'm going to talk to my wife or my husband first. We're not looking for permission. We're looking to cooperate. There's nothing wrong with that. Whether it's a man or a woman, if they're making all the decisions in a relationship and dictating, well, there's a problem there. It's the other side of the spectrum from serial infidelity, which plagues the Republicans and the Democrats. I guess what I'm really talking about here is the The selective morality. Moral outrage is a shirt these people put on. It's not a way of life. They don't actually genuinely care. What they're trying to do is manipulate the public that actually has a shred of decency to believe, through limited exposure to information, that their moral outrage is justified, and convince them that there's a moral stand to take, a gangster for an individual or target, when there is no moral stand. It's all just theater and theatrics. Politics is not a place. It's so funny because in politics, everybody pretends to be virtuous. Everybody pretends that they're at the top of the mountain. People pretend that they've never been wrong. People pretend that they've never changed. They never address their mistakes. They eliminate their humanness. Most of them will tell you that mankind has fallen, but try to get them to admit specifically where they have fallen down in their lives and either had to pick themselves up or had to look to the Father to pick them up or had to look to others to pick them up. It's really interesting. They lie with their very essence and their being, and yet they pretend to be perfect. There are no perfect men. There are no perfect women. And yet here they are, wasting all of our time in this public display of professed morality. It's really twisted. This I want to talk about. American Airlines mismanaged employees' retirement funds by investing in ESG. So this is actually really important, and it's a fairly recent case. I believe it was only brought in 2023. But what this has found, because ESG, and as a knock-on, this hasn't been found in the court in this decision, but I'm going to add it anyway, just so you know, ESG and DEI do not make money. In fact, they lose money for everybody that does it. Everybody that invests in this and goes whole hog into DEI or into ESG loses their money. So this decision, which I'm sure will go through other court processes, it's probably not final, but this decision says that if you take people's pension funds and you invest them in ESG, since it's such a loser, you are liable for the loss. Now, isn't that interesting? Can you think of the legal knock-on effects and the chilling effect that this will have, investing in all of these initiatives that don't make money, that don't make any sense, that absolutely destroy the value of meritocracy? And going back for a minute, this is actually, these two things are inextricably linked, because these are the people who invest in states of complete unreality, where a person's biology doesn't matter, and you can change your identity in that way as easily as you can change a set of clothes. They promote a delusion as real, a delusion that loses everybody money and destroys cultural franchises like Star Wars and Lord of the Rings and probably 1,000 other series and films that you can think of, where they had to vomit their ideology all over cultural icons. You can't even play a... Video games used to be a refuge where you could actually encounter new ideas. You could encounter non-politicized material. Now, I'm talking going back to the 90s and the early aughties, maybe even right up to 2010, 2014, somewhere in there. Video games used to be a refuge. And now they put out junk like Veilguard, where the DEI stuff has to be jammed in there. When you do character creation, you can have mastectomy scars. What sickness is this? Like, what sickness is this? Absolute denial of the natural state. Absolute denial of reality. But you've seen how things are changing now. You know, the pushback on this stuff is really starting to take off, because we can't live in this state and actually have a stable society. You can't do it. We got a demographic crisis, which is a big story. People aren't having kids anymore. for a lot of different reasons. And that's going to create such a huge issue moving forward in the next 10 to 20 years. And it's not an easily solvable problem because you have to convince people to have kids. And it takes an awfully long time to get a human up and running. Not just up and running, but stable. I don't think I actually became a real man until I was 25. I would almost say that my adolescent period didn't start until I was 20 or 21. Didn't really get rolling. I didn't start becoming a man until I was 23. But I feel like I graduated around the age of 25. That's a quarter century to get a functional human off the ground. Now, my experience isn't going to be everybody's experience. Of course, there's going to be wonderful people out there. I've got friends. Hopefully they're watching and they'll know who I'm talking about because I admire them so greatly. I'll just call them, I won't call them anything, but they have children. They got three children, homeschooled, teenagers. The one might be 20 now, but he might just be 19. And the first time I met them, I'm so used to teenagers having all these hang-ups, to being depressive, self-harming, all of these things that they pick up from public education, they pick up in the school environment, this cultural environment, which is rotten with DEI. Even here in Saskatchewan, it's rotten with DEI. If they're not on strike, they're programming your kids with this perversion. So I sit down, we're going to have dinner in my living room, and the parents are talking to my wife, and I'm sitting there talking to these teenagers. At the time, I think 14, 16, and 18. And I'm having a conversation about work, tractors, life. And I'm looking at them, and I'm like, they're neat and tidy. They're clean. They speak like adults. They're not hung up on anything. These are kids that I could be proud of if they were mine. We went out to the garage. We talked to my tractor. They were very interested, very engaged. And I'm like, wow, there must be a different way. We're doing something wrong in society. So anyway, that setting that aside, there is a different way. But the societal pushback, we're realizing that we're producing toxicity. We're manufacturing it. And then we're dumping it in society and we're wondering why it doesn't work. And then our solution to that is toxic empathy and toxic sympathy. And we just need more government. We just need more state. The Liberal Party of Canada goes on a victory tour because they're so proud of $10 a day daycare. Puh. What is so good about paying people as cheap as possible to raise your children for you so that you have to go out and work as a tax slave? Because all of these subsidies and all these free things that you think are wonderful, they're not free, they're paid for by you. And now you're divorced from your children even more. Now, I've made a choice. More or less ever since my wife told me that she was pregnant, I've made a choice to trade time with my children for money. Meaning, time with my children is more valuable to me than money. And that has created some circumstances. But I think it's priceless, and so many people are forced or design a life for themselves because they think they have to live. They think they got to have that career. They think they got to pursue money. They think they got to pursue success. We shame stay-at-home moms. We shame mothers. We tell them they're not enough, and we do it in subtle ways, and we do it in overt ways. Tradwife is a curse almost. Cisgender is a curse. But all of these things have a higher nobility than you can possibly imagine. They're the best paths, and that's the secret. It's like having children. Most of the people out there who don't have children will tell you that having children is a bad idea. And you will find the odd person who is, I would argue, mentally disturbed or there's something else wrong with them that will say that having children was a bad thing for them. They're few and far between. The real secret is that nobody can teach you. Is that having children is the best thing you can ever do with your life. It is the single best experience you could ever have And I am speaking as somebody who has had a lot of wonderful experiences in my life. I've engaged in just about everything. The best by far was having children. And you can't dispel the myth until you have them. You don't know. The entire society, getting back to the point or trying to reel it back into what we're talking about here, is geared towards destructive ideologies and tendencies. And we are slowly starting to figure it out. Now, who is behind this destruction? Well, that's a question for another day. I just want to bring up, too, this mainstream media ignoring ethno-religious genocide under Syria's new rulers. This is another selective morality issue. You have noticed, and I have noticed over all the years, that we only care about certain lives. And some of the lives that we care about, like the babies in the incubators back in the Iraq War, didn't even exist. So we cared about lives that weren't even lost, cared about lives that weren't even risked. And you note and have noted in recent times that whether or not you think Israel is justified in its military operations, we turn a blind eye to all the civilian death. And there's a lot of it. It breaks my heart every single day. Does it break yours? Do you give it a thought? Or like most people, do you just pass it over? We talk about humanitarian interventions. We talk about human rights. We talk about the sovereign dignity of states. We talk about Ukraine and how they have a right to defend themselves. But when NATO went in and bombed Gaddafi and killed him and took out his government and turned Libya into a chaotic, entropic wasteland where people were raped in the streets, the people who are questioning Hegseth about his multiple ex-wives, setting aside Epstein and Jimmy Savile and Diddy, these are just the latest names, setting all that aside, they didn't care about those lives, and they don't care right now, because it's not politically convenient to care about the fact that the people who have taken over Syria are slaughtering Christians everywhere. It's a cultural, and I guess you could say ethnic cleansing that's going on. And nobody's telling you about it. And the thing is, if you speak up about it, here's a new survey from Heterodox Academy. This is actually, it's old news. I've had it on my desktop forever, and I've been meaning to talk to you about it, and I haven't got to it. New survey from Heterodox Academy and College Pulse of 1,500-plus Canadian undergrads shows fear of free expression on campus. 63% of respondents reported they feared at least one formal consequence if they expressed their honest thoughts and opinions during class, and 40% of respondents say that they have experienced negative consequences after discussing their thoughts and questions on controversial topics. Now, you have to keep in mind, a large percentage of the graduates of our schools are going to be very leftist, and yet still the vast majority of them report being fearful to express their thoughts. Ideology, man-made ideology, is poison. It has poisoned our minds. It has corrupted our society. It has made us resistant to the truth wherever we find it. It has made the worst people, the most immoral people, the arbiters of what is real and what is philosophically good. Philosophically and spiritually good. It's not just dry like that. You have to reclaim your sovereignty. You have to start thinking for yourself. We all do. Because the people we look to for answers are just people like us. They all drop a deuce every day. And if they don't, it's a bad day. You have to look in your heart. And if you find they're a good person and you find they're a moral person, give yourself a pat on the back. But just remember that out there in this world, the people who run things are not like you. I'm Frank Vaughn, and I'll see you in the next one. Did you know that I have a website? FrankVaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again. And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.